So funny story. Yesterday I was at the doctor and there was an individual sitting across from me who was wearing a Star of David, and I struck up a conversation with them, and I was going to say I was Jewish, but something in my gut told me I shouldn't. And I saw certain symbols on the individual's shirt, and I ended up Googling them afterwards and reached out to my friend Ateret Violet Shmuel about it. And I said, Ateret, do you know this group of people? Do you know anyone that has this type of shirt sign? And she identified the individual as someone who's part of a community that really doesn't like Jewish people. So, phew, for not having anything happen there. Let's be real. We all know that anti-Semitism is on the rise in pretty much every city, country, and I want to just preface by saying that this episode is not meant to frighten anyone. The main goal of this episode is to educate and empower those who are listening to the episode, and Ateret has been a friend of mine for years, actually, and this wealth of knowledge right in my own backyard, you know, being an advocate for our community, being a human rights advocate and an indigenous rights advocate in her organization, Indigenous Bridges. And you're going to hear more of that. You know, what is the word indigenous? What is the definition of anti-Semitism, blood libel? What we can do as a community, why Ateret's work with indigenous peoples is beneficial to the Jewish community. So I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I enjoyed recording it with Ateret. She's one of my dearest friends, and honestly, she's a treasure and is doing God's work for us. So power to us, stay strong, and enjoy this week's episode.
No one's perfect, even if we secretly believe they are. So if you've been struggling and failing to keep it all together, you're in good company. Women today are pushing harder than ever to do it all and break through their personal limits. But what if we're pushing in the wrong direction? Join a growing movement of women exploring their boundaries as opportunities. Be empowered by their experiences to create a best life that reflects your expectations and no one else's. If you're ready for a different kind of podcast, then you've arrived. Welcome to Woman of Valor.
Hi, Ateret. Thank you so much for joining us. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and one thing that you love about yourself.
Hi, Barry. So my name is Ateret Violet Shmuel. I am an international human rights and indigenous rights advocate with about 20 years of experience in the field. I'm the director of Indigenous Bridges USA, co-director of Indigenous Bridges International, and I'm a Torah educator and a bunch of other stuff too. And thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate you. And one thing I like about myself, that's the question.
Love.
One thing I love about myself. I love that I am able to find something that I appreciate in pretty much any human being that I interact with and that I can relate to. And therefore, I'm sort of granted access to people in a way that not everybody is. I love that.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I love about you is your intensity in pretty much anything and everything.
Like, is it also my fashion sense?
Oh my God. Okay. One thing you should know about Ateret is that her favorite color is black. Is black even a color?
I think so. It might be the absence of color.
Yeah. So her favorite color is the absence of it. So basically whenever I'm like getting rid of stuff and I'm like, this is black, maybe Ateret will wear it. Because Ateret, like, how would someone like me and this Indigenous Bridges lady, my husband actually referred to Ateret as Indigenous for the first couple years of knowing her. We actually met in our local shul, our local synagogue. So Ateret, can you tell us first how you ended up here, because you are, you know, Israeli, basically, by birth, but by identity.
Yeah, I made Aliyah. I am Israeli. I'm a dual citizen. So I live full time in the Nachlaot neighborhood of Jerusalem, which is like where I belong in the world. I started working on this project, the Indigenous Bridges Project, about 3.5 years ago. And there was this, when there was a shift politically in the United States, I sort of saw something that really worried me. I kind of saw the writing on the wall. And I agreed to come to the United States about 3 years ago to do a speaking engagement tour, and really create a grassroots movement within Jewish communities and also within other Indigenous communities around the world, but mainly the United States, before anything got bad, to try and create allies and solidarity within our communities and an understanding of what was about to happen.
In regard to anti-Semitism.
Yeah. it seemed pretty clear for the last like 15 years. I mean, ostensibly it's Israel, but in reality it's an issue of like Jews, has become sort of a politicized issue in the United States. And as somebody who works in human rights and Indigenous rights, I exist within these circles that tend to be, you know, what people would consider woke. And I noticed a really disturbing rise in anti-Semitic rhetoric and what's considered, what I would call blood libel, which is the false rumors and false stories about Jews with the intent to drum up hatred and animosity and ultimately violence against Jews. And they've existed throughout history. Like we've had these things for forever. They're what set off the pogroms in Europe and many other things from like a historical perspective. But I started seeing that more and more in my own circles. And so I know that I have sort of a unique position as, you know, not only a human rights and social justice advocate, an Indigenous rights advocate with a lot of experience and a lot of people know me in this world because I've been involved in this for so long, but also as an Orthodox Jew and somebody who understands Jewish history, to be able to talk to communities that otherwise don't have space for us, don't have access to us, and be able to create an awareness about how vulnerable our communities are and the importance of being in solidarity and support of us. And also, you know, partnering our communities with other communities. So it's not just like a one-way street, you know, because we have so much to gain from, you know, community partnerships with other groups. So anyway, I agreed to come to the U.S. about 3 years ago in order to do that, and ended up in the Vegas area because this was sort of central to a lot of the different tribes that I work with. And I heard Barry was here and I wanted to be...
Yeah. Okay. So everything you heard up until now was true. And I, you know, initially was just like, oh, here's this Israeli traveler who loves the absence of color. We're probably never going to see each other ever again. But Tarot ended up sticking around for a little while. And my husband and I got to know a little bit about what she did. And quite honestly, until I met Tarot, I was not aware of the word and its definition that is Indigenous. So can you please explain to the listenership what Indigenous is and how that applies to your work with Native American tribes, with Jews, and this Indigenous Bridges organization that you have?
Sure. So Indigenous is a word that's gaining currency right now. It's sort of like it's a really important concept because it is used to describe peoples who have a unique relationship to their land. We as an organization, we use a modified version of Jose Martino Cobo's definition, which is a people who have an ethnogenesis from within a specific land space, who have historical ties to that land space that predate colonial contact, who have unique culture, language, dress, and like a religious or spiritual framework that ties into that culture, that people, and that land, and the desire to pass those on to future generations. And Indigenous peoples around the world have a unique relationship with our land and our culture. And unfortunately, are often the targets of colonization by like large world superpowers. But we hold as an organization that Indigenous rights exist, that Indigenous peoples have a unique right and claim to their land. And something incredibly important to offer to the world in terms of culture and land stewardship, and also tend to be the people that protect their land because we view ourselves as a piece of it. And so according to that definition, right, you have people who like are Indigenous, and you have people who aren't necessarily. Jews, by definition, we are an Indigenous people. The whole idea of diaspora.
The term diaspora, also known as galut or gullus, depending on what your ancestry is. I know every time I say things with an Eastern European pronunciation, Atarik kind of loses it. But yeah, she's kind of losing it right now with the word gullus. But yeah, gullus, diaspora.
Gullus. So the whole idea of gullus or diaspora is this idea of a people
we're misplaced
who are displaced from their land. Exactly. Right. So who are Jews? We are the people that are Indigenous to the land of Israel. We are the people who are Indigenous to the land of Judea. Like, we're called Jews because we're Judean, you know? We experienced colonization, met multiple waves of colonization, unfortunately, genocide and historical erasure, which we are still experiencing to this day. It's happening right now in like a major way. But the very idea of diaspora points to our Indigenous identity, that we're outside of our land.
Right. And we've been misplaced. And wherever we are in the world, that is not the land of Israel, is not our proper home. Place.
Right, not where we come from, not our ancestral homeland. And so Jews, we don't usually think of ourselves in these terms, right? Like, we don't usually think about ourselves as Indigenous, right? Like,
right, that, when I was wrong. The first time I heard Indigenous was not from you. It was like on Instagram when people were like anti-Columbus Day. Mm-hmm. It was like a happy murder of like Indigenous people day and colonization. You're all terrible human beings type thing. That's the thing that I saw, which I'm sure you're a part of, which is all lovely and dandy. But yeah, before I met you, I wouldn't have placed Jews under that, because we take pride of like, oh, we're in all these different locations and we don't have a specific race and we don't have the whatever, but like, thinking of that word, I never put together like the word of like diaspora as like you are misplaced, you know, and when the Messiah comes, when Mashiach comes, you will be, you know, replaced, you know, reassigned to your, you know, intended location type thing. So I love the idea of diaspora of like, no, you belong there. You're just not there right now. And you have to remember that. And there are ramifications to our existence because of that, like, say, anti-Semitism. But yeah, we'll get into that a little bit more. You were saying, Madir.
I don't remember exactly what I was saying. But
it was more in like the regard to like, we don't necessarily think of Jews like that, but there are other people that we would associate as Indigenous people.
Right. So Indigenous is a word that has sort of like reemerged in the world of human rights and social justice recently as being like an important concept. Because unfortunately, throughout the world, Indigenous tribal nations face unique issues and are often relatively vulnerable because of our small numbers. So Jews don't usually think of ourselves as Indigenous, but we are. And if we're able to sort of look at the issues that we face within the framework of an Indigenous rights issue, everything makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And not only that, but we're able to understand and reframe our own identity, which I think is really important, especially for like younger All right, I'm just going to back up a little bit. So I'm Orthodox. I'm part of the same community that you are, but I obviously did not grow up that way.
I've seen pictures. She didn't.
I did not grow up that way at all. I grew up completely secular. And, you know, in the world of human rights and social justice and a little bit of punk rock, if you will.
A lot of punk rock. Stop it.
A lot of punk rock. You know, and within those worlds, a lot of like younger Jews who are more integrated into American society or, you know, academics or politics or like whatever, are sort of fed this narrative that the Jews are part of the problem. The Jews are like white European colonialist settlers who uphold white supremacy and things of that nature. And so that was sort of the world that I grew up in and was educated in. I went to Brown University, which is like a pretty liberal university, and I studied Middle Eastern history and comparative religion and a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, like that was part of the framework that I was educated in. And it took me a while to sort of like pull that apart and really understand that I was being fed a narrative. And so now, after many, many years of research and also like existing in the world as a Jew and also existing in the Middle East as a Jew and also existing in the world of human rights, in the Arab-Israeli conflict as a Jew, I think it's a really important thing to help our youth and our people, especially more progressive Jews, be able to reframe and own their identity in a way that makes sense and that, you know, that we can take pride in. And we are an indigenous people. We are an ancient indigenous people who regained sovereignty and, you know, pulled ourselves back from the brink of, you know, a very scary genocide. And, you know, we now, you know, have reinvigorated our ancient language. And we've done all of these like incredible things. And being able to understand our identity in those terms is incredibly important for people who have sort of been disenfranchised from more mainstream religious Judaism. Because, you know, that's true. You know, like there are many different ways to be Jewish and to understand our Jewish identity, but being able to own it is important. So I think that understanding what indigenous means and how we fit into that framework is incredibly important.
I think it's even more important for those who are in the, you know, I think for every Jew, every human being that identifies as a Jew, to be armed with information is important. And I think that particularly for myself, I feel as someone who is visibly Jewish. I think the more visibly Jewish you are, the more susceptible you are to anti-Semitic hate crimes. And I very much appreciate it. I have two friends who run a social media account called Modern Ritual, and they are two Reform female rabbis who before Shabbat a few weeks ago said, you know, this Shabbat we're holding space and like praying for the safety of our Jewish brothers and sisters. And we would also like to recognize the, you know, seriousness of the rise in anti-Semitic attacks, particularly on those who are visibly Jewish. And, you know, tagged a few accounts of like Orthodox Jewish women that they follow, that they appreciated. And I was like, you know what, like even regardless, like regardless of like the nuances of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, because every single person's gonna like focus on something else. You know, I think that the anti-Semitism is what kind of unites us, unfortunately, and enables us to like kind of hold space for each other, but also hopefully empower us to foster that pride and fuel ourselves with information.
Yeah. It is really important. And unfortunately, Unfortunately, there is a huge uptick in anti-Semitism right now in a way that I've never seen in my entire life. And I don't know that anybody has seen in their entire life, even people who have, you know, survived things like the Shoah, because we're in a unique situation right now, which is that we have social media, right?
Right, so we have accessibility to things in every single location of the world.
Right, and people have platforms and use their platforms to spread information and misinformation. And so we've been seeing that. Like, from where I stand, it's pretty scary. You know, we have people like, they're politicians, models, musicians, comedians, news anchors using their platforms that can reach like millions and millions and millions of people. Bella Hadid, the mm-hmm. Arab model, who knows literally nothing about the history of the Israeli-Arab conflict. I think she has 43 million followers, which is something like 3 times the amount of Jews that there are in the world. Maybe 4 times the amount of Jews that there are in the world. There's, I think, 14 million of us globally. We're 0.2% of the world's population. We're a tiny, tiny, tiny ethnic minority. And we're an ethno-religious minority. So people don't even right. understand what we are because there aren't so many of us anymore.
Right.
You know, it's like us and the
And like the only thing that they know of like observant Jews is like unorthodox. So right, we're doing great.
we're doing just great. There is a really worrisome trend that's happening right now.
Right. And you are very privy to it because saying Atarit's more privy to a lot of this information than most of us are. We can filter our feeds. We can choose what we follow. Like
Atarit's
like a social justice warrior, and I'll like call her and she's like, I need to decompress. I was just on something with like very high caliber educators about like how to dismantle the state of Israel and like condemning Jews and like, I don't know what to do with myself. Can we get a coffee? And like, yeah. This is basically Atarit's life. So she's in the thick of it. And I actually told her before, I'm like, Atarit, you cannot get into specifics on here because I cannot have people get off this podcast and be in like an utter panic about what's going on. Like that's not what we do here. It's not what we do here.
It's not what we do here. And before I even say anything about what's actually happening or not, I like, you know, as scary as it is from my perspective and I'm really on the front lines. I'm like deep in the trenches on the front lines of this new kind of war that's happening, which is, you know, the war for public perception and understanding of who we are as a people and you know, whether or not the public thinks that we have the same right to exist as they do, which is like a very scary thing. And the spread of misinformation, which is going unchecked. And there are very, very few people out there who are able to occupy the kind of space that I am with the kind of knowledge and background that I have. For the last month or so, even before that, I've just spent like all day, every day, like in it with people. But before I get into that, I just want to say that I've come to a place where it's, you know, like I am religious and I'm a Bala Tshuva, you know? So like I came back to the world of like Torah observant Judaism from a place of like deep love. And I have to say that like, even also like in my own life experiences, like when things are really difficult, it's very hard for us to experience the pain and the fear and the suffering, and also be cognizant of the fact that it ultimately is for a bigger, like we're just part of this picture. There's like whatever we're in the moment is just part of, it's like a tiny fleck in like a giant painting that's going right. on. And we don't always have the ability to sort of like peek up over, you know, and like see the forest for the trees or something, whatever that saying is.
Sure.
But like we're, you know, if we're in if we're in the moment and we're in the minutia of it, it's hard to really pull back out and be like, oh wait, there's a bigger purpose, there's a bigger meaning, and this is ultimately, you know, this is ultimately for the good, because all things are for the good, because all things are of and from Hashem, you know. And, you know, there are many possible, like, bigger reasons why this could be happening right now. There are many, right. Like, maybe this is the time of Mashiach. Maybe we're meant to, you know, like, Geula is coming. Like, maybe this is the end of a Gullis.
Oh, God.
Galut, Kappa, Galut.
Yes, my Israeli friend.
So, you know, like maybe the, you know, like maybe there's something like incredibly beautiful in store, but like right now it's hard to be, you know, a cog in this big machine. But you have to fall back on Emunah. That's like what it is. That's what it's for. We have to believe that everything is there's a bigger purpose. There's a bigger meaning, and that, you know, all we can do in this world is to try and be the best people that we can be in the moment. Unfortunately for me, that means fighting Nazis all the time.
Right.
But it is, I mean, each of us have like a unique, a beautiful and unique role in this world, and, you know, tshuva can be done in many ways. So I think, I don't know. I'm trying to just to keep positive and to. No,
so I'm going to go back to something, because I mean, it seems like you said, you were on the, you know, other side of the fence in regard to, you know, Jewishness, Israel, you know, Jewish human rights and all that jazz initially, and, you know, made a switch. But how is it that you managed to get yourself into this indigenous rights space? How does, you know, working with indigenous peoples like Native Americans help Jews or help Israeli advocacy? What's the connection like, and what does it do?
So it's really important for us to have allies, because when we have connections with other communities, and those communities actually know who we are, they're far less receptive to, you know, like the hate speech against us and the propaganda that comes into their communities against us. So that's really important. How did I get into indigenous rights issues? I've always cared about indigenous rights. I think indigenous people I think indigenous rights are a real thing and are very important. And the truth is that my actual area of expertise is the Arab-Israeli conflict. Like, that's like my academic background. It's, you know, where a lot of my human rights work has been. I used to be a BBC commentator on the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Really?
Yeah, surprise.
Okay.
And I burned out. I burned out really hard, and I felt like no matter what I was doing, it wasn't making an impact, and that it felt a little hopeless. And so I couldn't do it. I was attacked on my way to pick up my wedding dress during Sukkotan, by some Palestinian nationalists, and I escaped, but I could not have, and it was a very frightening thing. And I just needed to pull back a little bit and be like, okay, what am I doing? Like, I'm about to become, you know, a wife and a mother. You know, I can't be in these situations that are so like, is this where I'm focusing my energy right now? Am I making an impact? Am I not making an impact? Is anything that I'm doing of value? And it's sort of, I had to recalibrate a little bit. And I ended up focusing more on indigenous issues, because it became really clear to me that if we're able to create a recognition of the similarities between our communities, we all, Jews, Native Americans, Yazidis, Kurds, Arameans, you know, Copts, First Nations in Canada, tribal nations in the Amazon, we all have similar histories. We all have experienced similar traumas. We all have similar connections to our land. We all have unique cultures. We all have unique spiritualities. Some of them are very similar. And we all have a lot to offer one another. And if we can come together to work together, we can create a much brighter future together. And so we've seen also that our relationships with other people and other communities, other minority communities, and specifically other Indigenous communities, has made those communities more resistant to anti-Semitism because they actually know us. You know, as Jews, we think everybody understands what we're going through. We think everybody knows our history. We think everybody sees the anti-Semitism that we're dealing with. We think everybody knows about the Holocaust and stuff, but most people actually really don't. Like, they don't know who we are. They don't know what we are. They don't know what we do. Like, people just don't know anything about us. And part of that is because, you know, like many other Indigenous tribal peoples, after we experience genocide, we sort of, or like any major trauma, we sort of become more insular. We circle our wagons and come together and are like, okay, well, maybe we can't trust the outside world so much. Maybe we're just going to take care of each other and ourselves for a little while. There's not so much interaction between our communities and other tribal communities. And the same is true with Native Americans or, right, you know, many other Native and Indigenous people around the world. And so we just sort of saw that we're all facing so many similar issues. We have so much to gain from partnerships. Like, let's create these relationships. And so we have been doing that for the last 3 years, very effectively, thank God. And as such, you know, when this last crazy bout of hate came up against us, we saw that some of the major political nations, the nations that sort of, you know, there are many different Native American tribes.
Yeah.
There's, I think, 576 federally recognized tribes in the United States, and then about several hundred more state recognized tribes, and then several hundred more unrecognized tribes. So there's a lot of different tribes. But when it comes to politics in the Native American world, you have several tribes that are very if they say something, a lot of other people will sort of fall behind them and follow what they say.
Okay.
And thank God, I work very closely with many of those tribes. When a lot of people and a lot of influencers and a lot of leaders were coming out sort of anti-Israel and promoting blood libel and hate speech against Jews and Israelis and, you know, justifying the assaults against us, these tribal nations didn't join in that. And that's a really, really big thing. That's a really, really big thing because it meant that a lot of other tribal nations also didn't join in that. So I think that there really is, it's really important for us to have opportunities to connect with other communities, especially other minority communities, especially other Indigenous minority communities. Because we really don't know enough about each other. Once we get to know about each other, we realize how much we have in common and how much we have to gain from a partnership and a relationship with one another. And also, we step up for each other. We are able to resist the misinformation that's being fed to our communities about each other. We're able to show up for each other in meaningful ways. Oh, which reminds me, because of all of the recent attacks, I actually was contacted by the ambassador of the Tongva Nation in LA, where many of the recent violent anti-Semitic attacks have been taking place, saying, I've been seeing what's been happening. I'm going to be in the area the second week of July. I want to give my official blessing and permission to be on my land to the Jewish community. And as the spiritual steward of that land, because Indigenous people have a unique spiritual relationship with our lands. And I want to extend that to the Jewish community. I want to extend my blessing and my protection and my welcome to the Jewish community as an act of solidarity. So having relationships with other tribes, with other nations, showing up for them when they need us, which we have been doing. We have been doing that immensely. We've, you know, the Jewish community came together and sent out like thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of medical equipment and water and food and first aid to Native American nations across the country during COVID through our project. And, you know, and we've showed up in many ways, in the ways that we can, and hope to continue to do. But when we show up for each other, we have solidarity, you know, and other people show up for us as well. So, you know, it's funny because like as a religious person, a lot of our communities really are focused on ourselves, right? Like just right. being a good person in the world. And I think that that's incredibly important. And I'm not downplaying that at all, but we also should take up opportunities to be able to be out in the world, you know, to be like a light in the nations as well as just right. a light in ourselves. So. Right.
No, so I think that a shift that we also need to make and we can see through your work is that there are some people that are like, yeah, anti-Semitism is a thing and there's nothing we can do to stop it because, you know, Esav Sonel Yaakov, like we're always going to be hated and that's it. And I was just, I that never sat well with me. And I also, you know, there are righteous Gentiles. I 100% believe that. And I mean, through our conversations, which I'm going to like shift in a little bit into this, it seems like some of these indigenous people might actually be a part of the lost tribes.
That's a big conversation and one that I touch upon a lot. And
especially when we hang out. Yeah.
So yes, there are for sure, there are really interesting connections and similarities between certain tribes. I wouldn't say all, but for sure certain tribes and Jews. But I was just thinking, I don't know if I really unpacked what anti-Semitism is in this conversation. Have I? I didn't really.
I think so.
Can we do that?
We can properly define it because we toss around the word as though we have the full definition, but I think right. a proper definition is helpful.
So it's really important for people to understand what anti-Semitism is because for the most part, like it's like this amorphous beast. And so most people don't really know what it is. And if they don't know what it is, they don't know how to point at it and be like, that's anti-Semitism. And they don't know how to combat it. And I think that those things are really important. So anti-Semitism, I like to define anti-Semitism as the portrayal of Jews as whatever a particular community especially despises at any given moment in time with the intent to drum up animosity towards Jews. So that is different depending on what community we're talking about, right? So anti-Semitism within America's political dichotomy between the left and the right comes off as very, very different, right? Right. So historically, the right has always claimed the right-wing anti-Semites, not the right and as a whole, but right-wing yeah. anti-Semitism has always claimed that Jews are brown, foreign, rabble-rousing socialists who are, you know, promote like immodesty and perversion and who are globalists who want to topple the established order so that, you know, the underdog and the proletariat, like the working class can overtake. And so they must be taken care of. They must be like stopped so that established order can remain. On the right, on the left, however, it's a very different thing. On the right. left claims that Jews are white, European, colonialist settlers, who are committing human rights atrocities and upholding white supremacy, who profit off the backs of the suffering of other minority communities, who think that they're better than everybody else, and who are the fat cat establishment people who yes. are oppressing everybody else. And so they must be getting rid of so that, you know, the people can succeed. Now, this spills over, and on the left specifically, I'm much more scared of anti-Semitism from the left, personally, from my own world. It scares me much more because it's in this language of social justice and human rights.
Right.
Which sort of gives you like
permission to do bad things.
Well, also it says essentially if you don't hold these really bigoted beliefs and these negative beliefs about Jews, about Israel and Jews, that you're a bad person, essentially. Right. And nobody wants to think that they're a bad person. No, everybody out there, no matter what they're doing in the world, holds that they're doing the right thing.
Right.
But if you package something, if you walk up to somebody and you say, you know, like, I know you're a good person and you care about good things and you want to do good things in the world. And right now we have this group of people out there that, you know, there are these elitists that will stop at nothing to harm minorities. They're committing horrible human rights atrocities, especially considering what happened to them. They're even worse than the Nazis and they're committing genocide and apartheid and, human rights
violations,
catastrophes, yeah, and violations. And, you know, we need your voice. We need you to help stand up against these people that will stop at nothing, that are bloodthirsty monsters, who, you know, represent all that is evil in the world, you know. And if you don't, then you're part of the problem. You put people who don't actually have, most people have never actually really interacted with a Jew, you know, let alone like know about Jewish history and experience. Right.
There's literally no skin in the game, like none.
Right. So you have all of these people that, like, you know, couldn't point to Israel or the Palestinian territories on a map, have never set foot in the Middle East, who like don't know anything about geopolitics whatsoever, who are like getting very vocally, publicly involved in condemning Jews in what is now very clearly blood libel, you know?
Right.
And what is blood libel? Blood libel, I think I described that earlier. It's just a story, a made-up rumor or lie about Jews that's intent is to make people angry and outraged and then inspire fear and hatred and violence against Jews. It happened, you know, about how they, I think it was the Middle Ages, they used to say that Jews sacrificed Christian children to use their blood for matzah.
Yes. Yeah, right? That's so the classic.
That's classic blood libel. So now it's just Jews are killing Palestinian children. And that is current blood libel. It's not even, they didn't even like invent new blood libel. It's just recycled in the language of human rights.
Right.
When in reality, as somebody who worked in human rights on the ground in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, I can tell you as a matter of absolute fact, Israel takes all more precautions than any other nation I've ever seen in the history of mankind to prevent civilian casualties, to prevent the killing of innocent children, to prevent those things. So that accusation is such it's so frustrating and confusing because it's so far away from the actual reality of what's happening. But it's being used to incite violence, and that's what we're seeing right now. So I think it's especially important in this day and age. The burden of responsibility is not necessarily on us to stop people from hating us. I'm not like victim blaming us, God forbid.
Right.
But we should, and this is sort of where my Chabad side comes out a little bit. We should, I really think that like, if we have opportunities to interface with other communities, if we have opportunities to get to know other communities, to be, you know, to support them, to understand their issues and what they're facing, and to, you know, stand with them when they're facing them as allies, that there tends to, relationships tend to be built. Not always, and it doesn't work. Right. And we're seeing it right now that there's a lot of frustration, especially within my own circles, especially with Jews within human rights circles. Are feeling very abandoned right now, but that if we are able to be like out in the world and interacting with people, whatever minority communities or other communities are around us, that we have an opportunity to build like deep, meaningful relationships and friendships that ultimately, you know, are really important. You know, not just on a small level, but also on a bigger level. So. Yeah.
I'm definitely with you on that. And I think that, you know, with like, with the individual listening, you know, I think interacting with someone on your quote unquote level, who's of a different, you know, community, or perspective or political party or, you know, religion or race or whatever, can be very beneficial to combating misinformation. And like you are in the, you know, educator, advocacy, human rights space. Me as someone who is not, I don't agree that I should be then going and approaching those advocates, human rights, you know, educators, that's more like a leveled thing. But if someone works in the same office as someone else, if somebody is a neighbor to someone of a different minority or religion or group, whatever, just to be that example or even be available for questions. I think one of our friends actually in our community went to our local supermarket and she's visibly Jewish. And he's like, how are you doing? And she's like, good. How are you? Like, she's like, I guess he thinks I'm someone else. She's like, no, but like, how are your people doing? He's like, I want to let you know that, like, I know all the stuff that's going on and we're standing with you and I'm so sorry. And, wow. You know, things like that. Like that happened at Albertsons, by the way. And wow. I'll tell you who it is after. But I think that each of us, you know, I think influencers can contact influencers, you know, of the same type of caliber to, yeah. You know, connect on that sort of thing. And I think that the takeaway for us, you know, non-advocates, like for me, I'm like, oh my God, like you're saying don't listen to influencers because they're misinformed, but me as an influencer, I'm going to take my informations, right? Like it really didn't sit well with me during this. And I'm like, I'm not quite sure how to do this because I'm like, don't listen to influencers, but I'm an influencer and you should listen to me because of my informations, right? Like the other side's doing the exact same thing. So for me, the way that I combat the misinformation is just being an example and, you know, throwing into conversation that I'm Jewish and throwing into like the mix that I'm observant. And, you know, like I had a conversation with someone today who is a wonderful, incredible Black woman. And we were talking and I was like, yeah, obviously, you know, I'm Jewish and look Jewish. So that would be a point of contention and like a certain thing that I'm a part of right now. I'm part of like a 3-day, you know, professional development thing. I'm like, you would never see someone like me on this type of thing. But that's fine. It's better not to have the attention on us right now, you know, and it was just like an unfortunate reality that like, it's that Jews are really being openly targeted and we have access to all of that information, but it's encouraging to know that, you know, there is something we can do to some extent with some groups of people. And what we can do is share what we know, but more importantly, share who we are.
Right.
And that's, you know, being a light unto the nations and being an example. And if somebody had a bad experience with Jews, then, you know, rectify that situation. You right. know, be the example where it's like, oh, not all Jews are X. Not all Jews are Y. Not all Jews are, oh, you guys don't have horns. Like, yeah, you know what? Dispel that information. Be that person to like break the news that there's no horns under the yarmulke. You know what I mean?
Right. I actually had somebody feel my head when they met me in Turkey.
Oh my God.
Because they thought I had, they were like, you're Jewish? Because they had never met a Jew before.
Right.
And so they literally, they felt my head to see if I had horns.
Plastic and surgery, then, baby.
No. Yeah, it was like, surprise. it was a little alarming, but we got through that experience. And now we're actually quite good friends. I've been putting together like slideshows and stuff like that on Instagram. If anybody wants information, I can give my Instagram.
Excuse me. That's like my last question of like how people can find you. Would you like me to sum up and ask the question?
Well, I don't want my phone to die.
Okay, so before your phone dies, thank you so much, Atara, for joining us. If people want to hear more of you, see more of you, how can they find you? Now go.
So I have a brand new Instagram profile because I had to shut down my my last professional profile. So I have very few followers, and the more people that want to follow me, the bigger my heart will swell with love. That's Atara Shmuel, AteraTshmuel. And I'm on Facebook, and people can look up Indigenous Bridges. Our website is indigenousbridges.com.
We'll put it in the thing because you can't spell that on here. It's too much.
No, we can't.
Too many D's and G's. And.
But I think the biggest takeaway I want to have people, you know, get from this is essentially like, yes, we're in it. We're in a scary time, but you know, whenever we're about to receive a huge miracle, it's the time before that seems really scary. You know, like all of our stories are about, you know, like terrifying times where we didn't know if we were gonna make it through, and then like something magical happened. And so I just want to like bless us that we have like the clarity to see that, and the emunah to like stay the course while it seems really scary. And that we should all just really be like our highest selves in this world, and like try to shine forth and be, you know, love and light and beautiful in any way that we can into the world, because that does make a huge difference and it does make a huge impact. And actually, the Rebbe Melubavitch, bring it.
You're quoting a lot of Chabad for a Nachman, like for a breast, like really. I'm like, where's Rebbe Nachman? But like, okay.
I can also bring Rebbe Nachman into it, but
this isn't one of your Torah classes, Atara.
Sorry. He talked a lot about, you know, combating anti-Semitism with philo-Semitism, with like showing people that we're, you know, the good pieces of who we are, because people don't know. So, and I can give a personal example. There's an activist that I know who was posting very, 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 very anti-Semitic stuff online. She didn't know any Jews. I invited her and her family over for Shabbat. She came for Shabbat. I fed her. We had a wonderful time. She came over another couple of times. And recently I've seen like a complete stop to the anti-Semitic posting. And she started really being like, hey, watch out for your Jewish friends. Check in on your Jewish friends. They're not okay right now. So okay. We really are, just by being good people in the world, just by being kind, able to make a huge impact. And I think that that's really important. And I only have 1% battery.
Okay. Well then, thank you so much for joining us, Atara. Please go charge your phone. And I will likely be WhatsApping you later because you're my real life friend too. Thank you everyone for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Woman of Valor podcast. Make sure to subscribe at thewvlife.com as well as on your favorite podcast listening app. Follow us on Instagram at Woman of Valor Podcast.